Persigo Press presents the Henry Rios Mysteries podcast. Hello, this is Michael Nava, author of a series of crime novels featuring Henry Rios, a gay Mexican-American criminal defense lawyer, and the producer of this podcast. Today we present Lay Your Sleeping Head, the first novel in the series. Lay Your Sleeping Head opens in the summer of 1982 in the fictional town of Linden, California, 30 miles south of San Francisco. Linden is the home of the prestigious university of the same name, founded in the 19th century by railroad tycoon Grover Linden. Henry Rios is a public defender, born and raised in a small town in California's Central Valley and from a working-class Mexican-American family. He is a graduate of Linden University and its top-ranked law school. In 1982, there is no internet. People smoke in bars and on airplanes. Most gay men are closeted, and no one has heard of AIDS. It's an America where 83% of the people identify as white, 85% as Christian, and 83% say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once declared that trees cause more pollution than automobiles, is the president of the United States. In this episode, Rios' quest for answers about Hugh's death gets him into serious legal trouble.
So who is this DA we're going to talk to?
Freddie Patterson.
Freddie?
Winifred. But the last guy who called her that is doing 25 to life at Folsom State Prison. So if you want to stay on her good side, call her Freddie.
Yeah? Come in. Hey, Terry. Good to see you. Who's this?
Henry Rios, the lawyer I was telling you about who's working with me on this case.
You were a PD, weren't you?
That's right.
Heard about your meltdown on that death penalty case. What was your guy's name?
Eloy Garza.
Yeah, Garza. Heard you told old Judge Klein to go fuck himself. No one could figure if you'd lost your mind or were setting up an ineffective assistance claim on appeal. Which was it?
I sincerely wanted John A. Klein to go fuck himself. He's a nasty piece of work.
Right. And on behalf of every other lawyer who ever wanted to tell him that, thank you. So, what's happening in the case?
It's on appeal for ineffective assistance of counsel.
Nice. You killed two birds with one stone. Told Klein off and got a reversible issue on appeal. Kudos. So, Hugh Paris. I read all the stuff you sent me, Terry, and my question to you is, why are you wasting my time with a dead junkie when I have real cases to prosecute?
I wanted your opinion. Was it an accidental overdose?
If it wasn't, someone went to a lot of trouble to make it look that way.
Exactly. Someone did.
Still not sure why you're here, Rios.
I represent the interest of Hugh's mother. She wants to know what happened to her son.
So she hires a criminal defense lawyer? I'm not buying it.
Come on, Freddie. What do you think?
I think this ship has sailed. But if you'd brought it to me when the kid died, I'd have made Thomas work a hell of a lot harder than he did before writing it off as accidental.
You don't think it was accidental?
Did I say that? Even if Orms had brought it to me fresh, we'd be miles away from any kind of criminal prosecution. For starters, we'd have to have a crime.
Homicide.
No direct evidence to support that. All you've got are some sketchy circumstances. Of course, we might be having a different conversation if you'd been straight with me, Terry. Did you think I wouldn't recognize the kid's name? He's a Linden.
How did you know that?
The university is the only reason this town exists, so I make it my business to know everything I can about Linden University and the Linden family. What else are you holding back?
Hugh was killed on his grandfather's order because he was threatening to expose Judge Paris's involvement in the deaths of his wife and son, Jeremy.
Orms, is he serious?
Hear me out. Freddie Patterson chain-smoked while I told her about how Christina Paris had planned to divorce the judge and cut him off when she and her son were run off the road and killed. I told her about the inquest that falsely concluded Christina and Jeremy had died at the same moment, clearing the way for the judge to take over the family fortune. I told her about the bribe to the commissioner who had conducted the inquest. I told her about my interview with Professor Howard, who had written Christina's will, and how the judge had found out about it from Jeremy. I told her how the judge had taunted Professor Howard after Howard had tried to set aside the simultaneous death finding. I told her how close Hugh had come to exposing his grandfather when he was killed. By the time I was done, Patterson's cramped office reeked of smoke. She crushed her final cigarette into an ashtray, then dumped the butts into a trash can stuffed with papers. I half expected it to burst into flames.
That's the damnedest story I've ever heard.
That doesn't mean it isn't true.
I don't know about true, Rios. I only deal in what's provable. Applying that standard, you've got nothing.
It's not nothing. Paris practically admitted killing his wife and son to Professor Howard.
You mean the nice try, Johnny, comment? That doesn't prove anything except that they don't like each other, and you said there was a long history of bad blood between them.
There's a ton of circumstantial evidence of motive. Who stood to gain the most by the deaths of Christina and Jeremy Paris? Judge Paris.
Unless you have something that directly ties the judge to the accident, their deaths were just a happy coincidence for him.
What about Hugh's murder and the break into my apartment? The judge obviously thought Hugh had evidence he was involved in the accident, so he had Hugh killed and ordered the burglary. That connects him to the accident.
Lawyers only say something's obvious when they know it's not. You're bootstrapping, Henry. Using the kid's death to connect the judge to the deaths of his wife and son. Problem is, there's no direct evidence he had the kid killed either. All you've got is inference on inference, a house of cards. I couldn't get an indictment on this evidence, much less a conviction.
Who else has motive? You know, Freddy, there is a point when a chain of coincidences become too fucking unbelievable to be coincidental.
Cursing doesn't make your case any more obvious. But because I like conspiracy theories as much as the next gal, I gotta tell you, you missed something in your chain of coincidences.
What?
Why was Hugh dumped at the university?
Okay, I'll bite. Why?
The university runs by its own rules, and it has its own interests. We poor fools out here want to solve crimes and punish the guilty. The university wants to protect its image. What do you think the university would do if one of the Lindens was found dead on campus?
Cover it up. But how would anyone have known Hugh was a Linden? He didn't have any ID on him. His killers took it.
You sure it was them? Our cops. They weren't first on the scene, were they, Terry?
No, the campus police were there before us.
Do you know how long it took them to call you after they discovered the body?
I assume they called it in right away.
Not according to the incident report I forced them to give up. 55 minutes. That's how long it took them to get around to notifying the department. Plenty of time to do a lot of things, including establish the kid's identity from his wallet and making the wallet disappear.
Let me see that report. I didn't even know this existed. Why is it all blacked out?
Redacted to protect the victim's privacy. That's the line of bullshit the university lawyers are peddling. I'm willing to bet my pension the campus cops saw the same things you did, Terry. The damage to the car, signs of a struggle, drag marks, the clumsy way he was injected, and came to the same conclusion you did, that this was no accidental overdose. Hell, for all we know, there might have even been more evidence pointing to homicide. Plus, Terry, you were there first. You should have caught the case, but it went to Thomas. You know, Thomas's kid is a senior at Linden High. Would not surprise me at all if she got into the university on a free ride.
Are you saying the campus cops may have tampered with evidence?
I'm saying that once someone figured out who the kid was, death by accidental overdose looked a lot more manageable PR-wise than Lyndon Eyre murdered on university campus. But you're missing the point, Henry.
Which is what?
Whoever dumped the body there knew the campus cops would find it, figure out who he was, and cover up any evidence that it was anything other than an accidental overdose. His killers didn't take his ID. They wanted the campus cops to know who he was.
That means that whoever abducted and killed Hugh also knew who he was.
That's right.
That points back to the judge.
Well, it's not obvious, but in my book, it's one coincidence too many.
Terry didn't know about the incident report. How did you find out about it?
Like I said, it's my job to keep tabs on the university. When Terry told me what she wanted to talk about, I did my own little investigation. I knew the campus cops had to have written up something, if only to cover their asses. And I also knew, from past experience, they probably didn't turn it over to the department. So, I made some calls, some threats, and they delivered it. That's when I noticed how long it took them to call it in. But that didn't mean much to me until I heard your story.
So you believe me?
I believe the university knows more than what it's saying about the kid's death. I want an unredacted copy of this report and to interview the campus cops who found him.
How are you going to get the university to cooperate?
By threatening to reopen the investigation into the deaths of Christina and Jeremy Paris.
Where's your jurisdiction? The accident occurred 200 miles away.
But the inquest was here, in my county. And now, thanks to you, I have evidence that shows the commissioner was bribed to return a false finding of simultaneous death. That makes it a continuing conspiracy to commit murder.
Because the inquest was part of the cover-up, and the cover-up is ongoing. That's very clever.
Didn't Orms tell you I'm more than just another pretty face?
Can you make it stick?
Won't have to. The threat will be enough. I'll have the university lawyers pissing their pants when I spin them the story of how the accidental deaths of the heirs of Grover Lyndon maybe weren't accidental after all, and involve a trustee of the Lyndon Trust.
But if there is evidence that Hugh was killed, it leads back to the judge, and that leads back to the earlier murders. You can't separate the two cases.
One step at a time, Henry. Give me everything you've got on Christina and Jeremy Paris. I'll go through it, see if I can dig up any additional evidence, and call the university lawyers for a meeting. I'll rattle their cages and see what falls out.
You really have it in for the school, don't you?
Last year, I had to dismiss a brutal gang rape case that happened in one of the dorms because the girl recanted after the university got to her. She was a townie one of her rapists picked up and brought back for sport. A few months later, she killed herself. Like I said, the university operates by its own rules. I don't think it should. Okay, kids. I'm doing court in 15 minutes. Take off.
Grant?
Hey, Henry, come in. I'm on the phone. Be off in a minute. What's that? Gay cancer? And what will they think of next? Okay, well, Henry's here. I gotta go. Yeah, that Henry. Bye. Sorry about that.
What's this about gay cancer?
Apparently, there's a new STD going around New York that the straight press is calling the gay cancer. One more plot to drive us back in the closet.
How do you figure?
Well, gay sex equals disease, right? I mean, if we're not shoving gerbils up our butts, we're giving each other cancer, as if most of us don't have enough shame to work through. Sorry. Stuff like that gets me on my soapbox. How was your day?
Orms and I met with a DA down in Lyndon who also thinks Hugh was killed. Now, she believes the university may have some evidence it's concealing that could be relevant. She's going after it, and she's a bulldog.
Sounds complicated.
Translate that into Latin, and you've got the Lyndon family motto. How about you? How was your day?
I appeared for a hearing on a summary judgment motion. We won. This is nice, you know.
What's that?
Us, here, asking about each other's day. You want a drink?
Nah. Sit down. My compliments to whoever taught you how to kiss.
My high school girlfriend. But half the time I was kissing her, I was thinking of some boy.
Hugh?
This was before Hugh. I think I want a drink.
Grant, I...
Sorry. I just wish he wasn't always here with us.
Come back here. Let's start over.
We should get out of bed. Eat something.
Not yet.
I have this little game.
Did you go back to the stud without me?
No. Listen, not that kind of game. The first time I meet a guy, the way I know whether I'm going to like him is to imagine him as a child.
Explain.
Remember when you were a little boy and you met another kid for the first time? You didn't know who he was or where he lived or what his dad did for work. You just started playing with him. And if you liked the way he played, you became friends. Simple as that. It's the same principle here. Before I know anything else about a guy, I ask myself, do I want to play with him?
Did you want to play with me?
From the first moment I saw you.
Southern California for his college ball with Long Beach State. Attacks the first pitch and it's foul.
Oh, come on, Giants. Get a hit. One miserable hit. Yeah, hello.
Henry, it's Aaron.
Aaron, where are you? You drunk?
Never mind that. I need to see you. Talk to you. You got it all wrong.
Got what wrong?
Not on the phone. Come over. Need to tell you something about Hugh Paris. Something you don't know.
Are you at home?
Yeah.
Okay. Sit down and don't have anything else to drink. Don't you pass out on me.
Sure. I'll be as sober as a judge. See ya.
Aaron lived in a small house in downtown Linden, set back from the street and shaded by a massive oak tree. His black BMW was crookedly parked in the driveway. Lights were on behind the curtain, and as I approached the door, I heard the last inning of the baseball game I'd been watching. I was about to ring the doorbell when there was an explosion inside of the house. I pounded on the door, calling Aaron's name. I heard the back door slam shut, and then a man ran past me and began to climb the fence that separated Aaron's yard from his neighbor. I ran after him, caught his left foot, and tried to pull him down. He gave me a startled, angry look, lifted a gloved hand, and the next thing I felt was something hard, heavy, and metal smashing into my skull. I let go of his foot and collapsed. I heard an object drop with a thud and saw the gun he had hit me with. I looked up. He was gone. Dazed, I picked up the gun, pulled myself to my feet, went around the back of Aaron's house and let myself in through the back door. Aaron? Aaron? Jesus! Aaron! Oh my God! Aaron! Police! Open up! My friend, he's been shot.
Drop the gun. Get down on the ground now. Cuff him.
Hey, there's someone in here. He's been shot. He's dead.
Mister, you are under arrest for murder. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can or will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to speak to him.
You've been listening to Lay Your Sleeping Head, a Henry Rios mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, please spread the word on social media. We depend upon your support to keep this series going. For updates and behind-the-scene extras, Visit us at our Facebook page, The Henry Rios Mysteries, or at michaelnavawriter.com under the podcast tab. We'd also love to hear from you. Message us on Facebook or email us at persigopress@gmail.com. That's persigopress@gmail.com. This is an abridged version of the novel, Lay Your Sleeping Head. You can buy the complete novel at Amazon. For this episode, our cast was Armando Rey as Henry Rios, Scarlett Hepworth as Detective Terry Orms, Debbie Durst as D.A. Freddie Patterson, Douglas Georgas as Grant Hancock, and Dean Larson as Aaron Gold. Our director is Russell Kaltschmidt. Our sound engineer is Dave Peck. Music and sound effects were composed by Josh DeRosa. The episode was written and produced by Michael Nava. Thank you for listening.